Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Today is Election Tuesday. That's why we have that special music where we try to look at the differences between Democrats and Republicans. And today I've got quite a substantial charge to raise against the Republicans. And that is that I believe they are a threat to the democratic institutions of America. Now, we just saw the Democratic National Convention in Boston, a relentlessly upbeat, optimistic portrayal of what John Kerry would do for the nation. I think there were one or two references to George Bush, maybe three or four to Dick Cheney. That's about it. Not too many. The Democratic Party was focused on giving their views, what they would do for the American people, and not so much on tearing down the Republicans. We've seen that that is quite a striking difference from the Republicans, who really can't sell much that they've done and basically spend all the time attacking the Democrats. But I wonder whether this upbeat, optimistic portrayal that the Democrats provided at their national convention was really a good idea. I wonder whether it hides a more sinister goings-on from the Republican Party. And I think that the Democrats, I understand their motivation. I understand they didn't want to be seen as America as always down on the Republicans. And yet, when we don't have a Congress or a Supreme Court or a media checking the excesses of this Republican one-party rule, it would seem to me the Democrats maybe have to do that job. Now, like I said, I have quite an extreme statement, you might think, to say. My suggestion today is that the Republican Party, the Bush administration, its toadies in Congress, its media that it controls, is all working slowly to erode our democratic institutions. I believe they are indeed a threat to American democracy. And when you look at it, when you look at the threats America faces today, most people would turn to Osama bin Laden. They would go and say, well, Al-Qaeda killed 3,000 Americans. They're out to kill many more. That is the greatest threat to American democracy. I would argue that Al-Qaeda is a great threat to American security, but not so much to democracy. I think that this country banded together to fight the Al-Qaeda threat. And let me be clear, I'm not arguing, as I've heard some, very few, but some leftists argue that George Bush is a fascist or a Nazi or he wants to bring death camps to the United States. That's simply not true. I understand that. But if you look at the things that we value in America, if you look at our Constitution, if you look at our democratic institutions, our checks and balances, I think it's pretty clear that the Republicans have systematically, not accidentally, systematically gone and tried to disrupt and dismantle our democratic institutions. And I know that sounds extreme. I know that if I were debating Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity, what would they do? They'd immediately lump me in and say, well, you're an extremist like Michael Moore or Howard Dean or Al Gore, who they're calling extremists now, and we don't have to listen to what you have to say. So I plan to bring facts. Facts, facts, facts. To support my argument. Most of these facts, I should say, to listeners of the Inside Scoop, they're not new to you folks. You've heard them before. You've heard them on various programs. But what I want to do today is to bring them all together and list fact after fact after fact and see if you also come to the conclusion that this administration is, in John Dean's words, worse than Watergate, worse than the Nixon administration, worse in terms of trying to stop and hinder American democracy. So I'm going to give lots of examples, but I know and I believe that there should be another view. There is another view out there. There are defenders of George W. Bush. And I want to invite a little bit later on, after I make my argument, on the show, Tom Robbins. He is the state chair of the Utah College Republicans. He's been on the show before. To try to answer these charges, these quite serious charges I'm making against the Republican Party. And I hope, we'll see, I hope he sticks to the charges and tries to answer them and doesn't go on and give ad hominem attacks and the kinds of things Republicans are doing against John Kerry. I think ad hominem attacks, you know, like calling someone a flip-flopper without giving specifics, is just that. It's the sign of a weak argument. If you call someone names, it's a weak argument. So no, if I just said the Republicans were threats to democracy and I didn't give details, that would be a weak argument. I agree. But let's give some of the examples that I want to talk about today. Everything from the election of George W. Bush or should I say the selection of George W. Bush by the United States Supreme Court, to the fact that he won in an anti-democratic way, he received the second most amount of votes and still won, to the fact that our Senate is elected in an undemocratic way, our House of Representatives is elected in an undemocratic way, our Supreme Court is chosen in an undemocratic way. It's not just that. It's Congress being muzzled. Congress not investigating the President of the United States. Congress not issuing a single subpoena despite the thousands that they issued against Bill Clinton. Bush not needing to veto a single bill in Congress because the Republicans in Congress are doing everything he's doing. It's the media, not just the media under Republican control, though that's increasingly becoming powerful, Fox News and Rupert Murdoch's papers and the like, but the media refusing to examine these questions, either because it's owned by Republicans or because they don't want to admit this terrible thing that I'm talking about, the Republican threat to democracy. And we see it in Congress in things like not being allowed to amend bills, not being allowed to see bills before they vote on them, changing votes, keeping the vote open to change votes, doing things in the middle of the night, not allowing popular measures to even come for a vote. When Congress in both houses votes for something the Bush administration doesn't want, then all they do is they use anti-democratic measures to get around those votes. We're going to talk about all of those things. Everything from Tom DeLay using the Homeland Security Department to do his dirty work in Texas, violating Texas law to do that, to Bill Thomas calling out the Capitol Police because Democrats in Congress were daring to hold a private meeting. But I want to be clear, I'm not talking about the specifics of Bush's policies today. Usually on Election Tuesday, we talk about whether you're pro-choice or pro-life on abortion, how you feel about gun control, how do you feel about Bush's tax cuts, how you feel about the war in Iraq. I'm not talking about Bush's policies here. Let me be clear. I'm talking about the principles and values, the rules and regulations, the political norms that I believe George Bush and the Republicans are systematically violating. You may be for tax cuts, you may be against tax cuts, but shouldn't the public know the truth about the tax cuts? Should they know the truth about the Medicare bill? The Medicare bill is a classic example of the kind of thing I'm talking about. I'm talking about George Bush dismantling scientific agencies that used to use science to report to the government what's going on, but instead they put the policy first, and then they threw out the scientists and now are choosing scientists to match the policy. The same is true with intelligence. Instead of letting intelligence drive policy, they've been making policy drive intelligence. Instead of finding what's going on in the world, right, and then using that to decide what we should do, they decide what we should do and then manufacture the intelligence to make the policy. We've seen this both in classification and declassification. This is really extreme stuff the Bush administration is doing. They refuse to declassify anything that shows them as being politically at fault. Remember that memo? Bin Laden determined to attack the United States? They are against and against and against showing that until finally the 9/11 Commission basically forced them to show it. But was there any harm? Was there any danger of national security? No. Just danger of hurting George Bush politically. And yet they declassify information that's also supposed to be secret to hurt their political opponents. And note that I've talked all this time, and I haven't even mentioned Iraq. I haven't even mentioned the lies and misleading on weapons of mass destruction and the connection or lack of connection to Osama bin Laden, or the false statements that they'll greet us with open arms, or that oil will pay for the reconstruction, or the misestimates of cost or troops. I'm not talking about any of that. What I'm talking about is the misleading of information, okay? Keeping government secret. Why is it that the Energy Commission cannot give information about what people they talked to, what documents they used? Why is it that they're fighting that in the Supreme Court? What is going on here? How is it that we're using our institutions, the IRS, the Medicare, we're using them as rah-rah cheerleaders for the administration instead of giving us analysis that is honest, that is nonpartisan? We used to have civil servants in our government that gave our government unbiased, nonpartisan information. And yet this administration, again, and I argue, is systematically going through and trying to make sure that these nonpartisan institutions can't react, can't give the public information. If they can't give the public information, if Congress isn't demanding the information, the media, which is often lazy, isn't focusing on it. No one's focusing on the Valerie Plame investigation, where it looks like Karl Rove and other high-up members of the Bush administration may have committed treason for political advantage, far worse certainly than anything Nixon did. None of this is being followed up on because we don't have an investigatory Congress. We've got a rollover press. And even these independent institutions, these watchdogs in government, civil servants, are systematically being told to shut up. Well, it's quite an indictment. And so I want to go and I want to give the specifics of each of the things I'm talking about. And then I want to give Tom Robbins a chance to respond. I think that's fair. I believe in giving people a chance to respond. There's a lot he's got to respond to. But I want to start with a specific example. And I also want to invite you folks to call in. All you have to do is dial 877-57-SCOOP. Toll free, 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. I'd like to start with a specific example, and that has to do with the Medicare bill. And I'm picking this not because it's the most important example or even the most severe example, but because I think it puts together so many things. It's just a good prototypical example of how this administration works. Let's go through the Medicare bill piece by piece, right? The Medicare bill was opposed by the majority of members of Congress, including almost all Democrats and a substantial number of Republicans who thought that the bill cost too much. So the administration got 13 Republicans to agree to vote yes if the bill cost no more than $400 billion. That was the deal. If it cost no more than $400 billion, these Republicans would vote yes. Now, the administration knew that the bill would cost $534 billion. It would cost about a third more than the absolute limit to get these congressional Republicans to agree to sign the bill. And the chief actuary of the Department of Health and Human Services, and a civil servant, he'd worked there 31 years. This is not a guy who's a Democrat or Republican. This isn't a guy trying to serve some partisan purpose. He's an actuary. He's an accountant. His job is to crunch the numbers and to do so fairly and honestly. Okay, he was asked by Democrats and Republicans about the numbers, and he wanted to tell them the numbers. He wanted to tell them actually how much the bill cost. And in fact, his boss, Bush appointee Thomas Scully, appointed by Bush to run Medicare, told him, don't share the accurate information with Congress. Now, that sounds extreme, and yet we know that Scully specifically instructed Foster, don't reveal the number, we can't tell the members of Congress the truth. And yet, when they bring the bill to a vote on November 23rd, just before Thanksgiving, it actually loses. It goes down in flames. The vote is lost. What happens? Do the Republicans lick their wounds, try again another day, as Hillary did with her health care plan? No. No, because when you lose the votes in the Republican Congress, that doesn't mean you've lost. They held the vote open past the 15-minute limit. They held it open all night, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m., while George Bush and the Republican leaders tried very hard to twist arms. And when they couldn't just twist arms, they promised money, cash on the barrel. Nick Smith, Republican of Michigan, again, if he's a Republican, why would he lie about this? His son was offered $100,000 for his political campaign if Nick Smith changed his vote till he was shut up by House officials. But these Republican House officials, Denny Hastert, Tom DeLay, they were the same ones that Nick Smith accused of offering the bribe. This, of course, is a bribe. It is a criminal offense. And what's interesting is that he said it, and, of course, there's going to be no investigation. Why? Because Republicans control Congress. They don't investigate these things. So they held up the vote for 3 hours, promising everyone cash and pork and everything, managed to change the vote. And when the Republicans switched all those votes, one by one vote, by lying to members of Congress, by bribing people on the floor, by breaking all the rules of the House, by restricting political appointees and civil servants from telling the truth to members of Congress or even answering their questions, they managed to win this vote by one vote. But that's not all. That's not all. That's not the entire history of this Medicare bill. After it was done, Bush wanted to sell it to the American people. Instead of selling to them before the vote, he sold it to them after the vote. How did he sell it to them? He used $9.5 million in taxpayer money, yours and mine, to put up an information, like an infomercial, if you will, to sell how the plan was so good for the Republic, how it was so good to older people What did he do to use that? Did he say, this is George Bush wanting to sell the plan to you? Did he say, this is taxpayer money? No, none of that. He sold it as a reporter. He had a video commercial, if you will, a video infomercial, and he put in a fake reporter who called herself a reporter. She said, I'm a reporter here reporting on the Medicare bill, pretended to be objective, when this was no more objective than Pravda or any of the Soviet newspapers. In fact, the General Accounting Office, one of the few independent bodies that's left under this administration, ruled it was an illegal use of government money to do this Republican infomercial for the Medicare bill. So, the money was illegal. Did the Republicans pay it back? No. Was this investigated? No. It can't be investigated. Congress cannot investigate the administration unless the Republican majority wants it to be investigated. Now, this Medicare example is just one of many, many examples. One of the reasons I gave it is because it wasn't Iraq, it wasn't tax cuts, it wasn't all the things that we're familiar with. The point is, this one example shows again and again and again how Republicans are busy dismantling the institutions of our democracy, the checks and balances that protect us. And I realize it's a very strong charge I have to make, and I'm sorry I have to make it. I certainly never felt that Ronald Reagan or George H.W. Bush did any of this. But this president, I'm sorry to say, and the Republicans that support him in Congress, does seem like he is anti-democratic. He's attacking democratic institutions. Now, again, I don't think we have to argue about, and I haven't argued, about whether the Medicare bill was good or bad. I'm arguing that they're lying, that they're misleading, that they're preventing accurate information, that they're doing things like bribery and violating House rules. These are the problems. You can agree or disagree on tax cuts or Medicare or abortion, but what you shouldn't agree or disagree on is protecting our democratic institutions. So that's the start of my argument in this debate, but I want to give Tom Robbins, the state chair of the Utah College Republicans, a chance to respond to this on the Medicare bill and to really anything I've said. And I also want to give you callers a chance to join in the discussion. The number is toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. But first, I want to welcome Tom Robbins to the show. Tom, thanks for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Hey, thanks. That's right. I'm Tom Robbins, and I'm reporting for duty, Mark.
Okay, well, report for duty. Fair enough.
I'm glad to be here.
And I'm glad, because I think it is your duty as a leader of a Republican branch to explain to the American people what your party is doing and to tell me what of I've just talked about, what you agree with, what you disagree with. Whatever you feel about the Medicare bill, you can't support these tactics I've just mentioned, do you?
Well, I think that, you know, as far as the debate's concerned, I mean, we're talking today is what's the bigger threat to democracy, Al-Qaeda or the Republican Party? I'm going to obviously argue that Al-Qaeda is the primal threat to democracy and the Republican Party isn't. I think, you know, it would be interesting, Mark. I would love to see, I know the Internet wasn't invented until Al Gore came along, but if it was in the 1950s and the 1960s when the Democrats had an ironclad control of the House of Representatives and the United States Congress, I wondered if you'd be arguing the same tactics, if you'd be just as passionate about basically the heavy-handed politics that you're talking about today.
Well, I don't think, first of all, the Democrats were as bad, but let me just agree with you that those tactics are not appropriate no matter who does them. It's that simple. I don't agree with anti-democratic tactics.
The problem then that you're identifying, Mark, is not necessarily one of Republican or one of Democrat. It's one of politics. Because obviously we can see, and there's just volumes and volumes of books that have been written as far as the heavy-handed politics. I mean, Lyndon LBJ, who basically ruled the Senate with an iron fist, I mean, he literally used to follow freshman senators and freshman congressmen into the bathroom.
That's true.
And intimidate them.
That's
and
true.
Use the bribery and the Dan Ross and Kowskis and the whatnot of the entire majority of the Democratic Party. So I think as far
let me just deal with those two examples just real quick. I mean, following someone in the bathroom is hard politics. I certainly agree with that. But it doesn't damage our democratic institutions. It's kind of gross. And it's kind of hard-hitting. But it's to me, this is very different from gerrymandering a whole state so that people can't have the right to vote, from removing blacks from voting rolls in Florida, from refusing to allow a paper record of elections, from having the Supreme Court decide the presidency. Those are all far more serious threats to our democracy than, yeah, LBJ roping in people and pushing them in the bathroom. And Dan Rostenkowski, yes, he was bribed, and yes, he was convicted in a court of law, removed from the Congress, That's very different. Why hasn't Tom DeLay been convicted and removed from the Congress? The people that bribed Nick Smith, Tom DeLay used the Homeland Security Department to help him in Texas. He has all these faulty things going on with his corporations where he's giving money to control things in Texas. I mean, you know, it's one thing to say that there are bad people in the Republican Democratic Party. I agree with that. But Dan Rostenkowski was punished. None of these Republicans that I've mentioned have been punished for their acts.
I think that, you know, I think it goes back to just basically it's not necessarily a specific problem of the George W. Bush administration, though kind of the hate and the montages being focused on that. I think you'll find just volumes of work if when the Democrats were in control of their power politics. I mean, Lyndon B. Johnson, I mean, we mentioned that as a funny example. He used to follow people in the bathroom and intimidate, you know, the little, you know, just the daylights out of these people. But it didn't stop at that. Do you not think that there was bribing involved? Do you not think that there was coercion involved? Do you not think that there was votes that were held and those different tactics used?
No. The only time the Democrats held open a vote, I know of one time in the entire history they controlled the Congress, they held up a vote for 15 minutes because one Democrat apparently voted, made a mistake, accidentally voted, he had said he was yes on a bill and accidentally pushed the wrong switch, and they held open the vote to change that. The Republicans cried foul. Frankly, I don't think they should have done it, but that's very different from systematically holding open every single vote that the Republicans are losing until they can switch the votes until they win. That's a very different thing. If whatever the Democrats did, the Republicans have brought these anti-democratic tactics to a much higher level.
I don't know. I think that, I mean, obviously you are an expert and well-known for your knowledge of the 2000 elections, when all that happened between Al Gore and George W. Bush. I wonder if you're just as passionate about the things that went on in the Richard Nixon JFK election. Well, literally, you know, I'm coming from Chicago. It was a joke when I was in school that the old-time teachers and the people that were around in that era who were teaching us our, you know, intro to political classes would just joke around how basically Mayor Daley rigged it so that JFK could be elected president. I mean, do you find that just as anti-democratic? Are you just as passionate about that as you are the 2000 election?
Absolutely. It shouldn't be done. We've got to go to commercial break, and I'm going to give you more time to respond to what I have to say, Tom. But on that, let me say two things. One, check out the electoral map of 1960. You will see that Illinois would not have made a difference in the election. If Kennedy had lost Illinois, he still would have won the electoral votes for the election. I should note that people say the Republicans did as many sneaky things downstate as were done upstate. I don't approve of that. I want to make that very clear. But what I find very interesting, and I'm going to give you a chance to respond when we come back from commercial break, what I find very interesting is that all these things I'm talking about, and I mentioned two dozen things probably the Republicans have done in the last 4 years, and all you can seem to do is say, well, others have done it. The Democrats have done it. I want to know from you when we come back, Tom, if you approve of the things that have been done. I want to know if you agree that these were good things or not, and if you're willing to condemn the Bush administration and the Republicans in Congress for doing those things. It's one thing to cast aspersions on history, and we can talk about history, but my question is, what do you think about what the Republicans are doing today? So I want to hear from you, Tom, on that, and I also want to hear from you listeners. All you have to do is call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, and we'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Because their intelligence was wrong, was the reason for war based on lies and corruption. Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
If a thief broke into your home and stole a couple of $1,000 that you had carefully saved from your paychecks and stashed away over the last 3 years, you could call the cops and try to get your money back. But who do you call when that thief is the CEO of your company? CEOs have been routinely stealing hundreds and even thousands of dollars from the deserved paychecks of each and every worker in America, pocketing much of this loot themselves and converting the rest to corporate profits. The grand larceny of the CEOs is that they've been filching every worker's share of the enormous productivity gains that America has racked up since the recession officially ended in November of 2001. Productivity is the increase in products or services that each worker churns out, and Americans have been phenomenal at this, fueling an explosion of new economic growth. The theory and promise of free enterprise is that if our workforce of millions of people becomes more productive, the workers will enjoy the bulk of economic gains generated by their improved output. Yet in this current 3-year burst of productivity, America has lost jobs and wages have either stagnated or fallen. In other words, America's working families are being fleeced by the pinstripe thieves sitting atop corporate headquarters. Workers' share of the new income they've generated in this recovery is the lowest ever recorded, while the fat cats have hauled off the most on record. An in-depth analysis by the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University finds that while the workforce usually is rewarded with 65% of the increase in national income, this time they've received only 38%. Profits, which go overwhelmingly to only a few investor elites, usually get under 18% of the productivity increase, but now they're getting more than double that. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a massive historic level of theft, and the pinstripe dandies pulling it off ought to be wearing prison stripes.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, sildenafil citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra, and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
Even the score, when the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't hit their heads on the door.
Welcome back to Election Tuesday here on The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and I'm making an argument that might sound radical, might sound severe, but I got a lot of facts to back it up, and that is that the Republican Party is threatening American democracy. No, I'm not arguing that they're trying to kill thousands of Americans like Al-Qaeda, but I am arguing that they are systematically going about dismantling our democratic institutions, our constitutional checks and balances, our watchdog agencies, our media, all that the public needs to be informed about what's going on. It's not just that they're misleading us. They are actually taking apart the institutions that tell us the truth. And I'm debating the issue with Tom Robbins, state chair of the Utah College Republicans, and so far, he hasn't really disputed what I'm saying. What he's basically argued is that in history, well, some of the Democrats did the same thing. But I'm going to give him another chance to respond to me. I'm going to give you a chance as well. All you have to do is call in 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, and add your 2 cents. And let me start with a caller that called in during the break. Caller, you're here on The Inside Scoop. What's your name? Where are you from?
Yes, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon from Michigan. What's your comment or question?
Well, I'd like Tom to defend how this latest terror alert, based on 3 to 4 years old information with no apparent current timeline, is not politicizing fear, and that the use of terror alerts in general are not tools used by the current administration to politicize fear.
That's a great point, Gordon. Let me go on and hang up and ask Tom the question. Tom, I think it's a great point Gordon makes. We now know. I'll tell you, I was ready to believe this terror alert. I announced on my show Sunday that even though I mistrusted this president, I accepted that because Sunday was a very specific target, that this time I believe there really was a threat. But now we learn in our newspaper today, these threats are 3 and 4 years old. Doesn't that sound suspicious to you, Tom?
Oh, not at all. I think that what you're dealing with here is a double-edged sword. Because if we were to be attacked, and we know that Al-Qaeda wants and has a great desire and is organizing and is trying to fund and coordinate attacks on us, that, if they were to attack and God forbid, do something at the Republican convention or anything else or kill thousands of Americans, we'd be on your show a week, a month later. Why didn't they warn us? Why didn't they give a heads up? There was an intelligence failure.
Okay,
I mean, you're dealing with a situation here.
But Tom, why not tell us the truth?
You're in a catch 42.
Catch 22. Why not tell us the truth? No problem. That's my problem. The Republicans are constantly inflating the numbers. Why not tell the truth, Tom? Why not say this? Look, we have determined, based on the Pakistani captures, which is another thing, by the way, that I said was going to happen on my show during the Democratic National Convention. They caught a guy June 12th and just announced it right before Kerry's speech. Very interesting. But one of the things that they learned was that 3 or 4 years ago, Al-Qaeda was casing out these specific buildings. Why not announce that truth to the American public? Hey, American public, 3 or 4 years ago, Al-Qaeda was casing out these buildings. We want to add a little bit of security to these buildings. But because this information is 3 or 4 years old, we don't know whether it's true or not today, and we're not going to raise the orange alert. Why not do that?
Well, I think you have a situation where with the increased chatter, and with what had been reported a few years ago, they combine that stuff together and they issue a report. And I think if something were to happen or something would have happened without them doing that, I think that you would have found yourself in a situation of severe criticism and belittling of the administration. And I think they're doing what's responsible. I think that people are acting appropriately and that we're going to be able to be secure. But that's the big dilemma of this president or any other president who will serve in America's history.
Okay, but this tower alert, and the reason why I at first actually respected it, and later I don't anymore, but at least it was specific. It mentioned specific buildings, the IMF, the World Bank in Washington, financial centers in New York and New Jersey. Every other prior terror alert was nonspecific. Watch out, Americans. Be scared. Whether you live in Wyoming or Utah or New Orleans or Podunk, you better be afraid. We're not going to give you the specifics. And, oh, by the way, this nonspecific terror alert we're going to announce the same day that Kerry chose Edwards as his vice president, the same day that it's shown that Colleen Rowley's memo about the 9/11 hijackers was ignored by higher-ups of the FBI. It just aired. Whether you live in Wyoming or Utah or New Orleans or Podunk, You better be afraid. We're not going to give you the specifics. And, oh, by the way, this nonspecific terror alert we're going to announce the same day that Kerry chose Edwards as his vice president, the same day that it's shown that Colleen Rowley's memo about the 9/11 hijackers was ignored by higher-ups of the FBI. It just happens that every single nonspecific terror alert happens to be on a day when there's other bad news for the Bush administration they want to bury in the press. Is this just coincidence, Tom?
Well, I think that's completely untrue. I don't think that you can link every terror alert and every lowering or raising of the terror alert and the different security measures specifically to Democratic Party-sensitive issues and stuff like that. I think that's a mischaracterization, and I don't think the record shows that.
Well, let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hey, Mark. This is Don from Atlanta.
Hey, Don from Atlanta. What's your question or comment?
Well, first, just what you were commenting on about when the releases of these terror alerts, it sounds like wagging the dog to me. My comment is that you're saying which is more dangerous.
Oops, 50,000 Democrats, mostly blacks, aren't allowed to vote.
50,000 white, wealthy Floridians, and then Al Gore had been elected. Imagine what you would be hearing about that today. And then we've got James Baker, who led the legal charge in Florida to get the election for the Republicans. You've got him now representing the Carlyle Company, representing the Royal Saudi family against the victims' families in 9/11. So they've already done it. I actually believe Michael Moore was pretty close to being right when he said that election was a coup d'etat.
Well, I agree with you, Don. I want to give Don a chance. I want to give Tom a chance to respond. So, Tom, thank you for your call, Don. I appreciate it. Tom, what about this? I mean, they removed 50,000 voters from the voter rolls that are mostly Democrats, mostly African American. They haven't committed a felony, as claimed. We've gone through the whole history of how they told Choice Point and the local firm, Catherine Harris, specifically instructed them, oh, that's okay if they're not really felons. We'll deal with that later. I mean, removing people from the voting rolls, don't you think, if it can be shown that Catherine Harris was behind this, that she should be put in jail for a very long time?
Well, I think that, you know, if it can be proven that, you know, laws were broken, there needs to be some justice in that respect. But I think the Democrats have just focused, you know, completely on the past and aren't focused on the future. The only thing that they're united about is their hate for the President of the United States. And that message doesn't really resonate. When people saw Michael Moore sitting in the same kind of elevated stature and VIP box with former President Jimmy Carter, I think they were disgusted.
Well, hang on. Let's talk about the future, because I want to answer Don's question about elections. Let's talk about the future election of 2004. We already have the case where Florida officials are losing vote counts and then miraculously finding them again. They already tried to do the same felons list again. It was only stopped when a brave election supervisor called Ian Sancho, who came on this show and talked about it, managed to stop it. But there's more than that. There's the electric voting run by Diebold, a company with clear Republican ties, and they refuse paper records. They refuse records to verify how people actually voted. I've never understood why Republicans support allowing fraudulent voting, but we also have places in Florida, again, where the poorer, more Democratic counties have to deal with election systems where they throw out 2-3% of votes, and Republicans get the best systems. Shouldn't everyone's vote count equally, Tom?
Well, yeah, and, you know, when we were talking about the Democratic convention, I know you brought up that it didn't matter that Illinois was disenfranchised in the JFK race because they didn't matter electorally. I think that every vote counts.
Oh, it does matter. And if it could be proven, let me just say right now, if it could be proven that some people did stuff in Illinois, absolutely they should go to the best systems. Shouldn't everyone's vote count equally, Tom?
Well, yeah, and, you know, when we were talking about the Democratic convention, I know you brought up that it didn't matter that Illinois was disenfranchised in the JFK race because they didn't matter electorally. I think that every vote counts.
Oh, it does matter. And if it could be proven, let me just say right now, if it could be proven that some people did stuff in Illinois, absolutely they should go to jail, both the Republicans and the Democrats. And in fact, I'd be willing to investigate it right now. I would be willing to argue that anyone that manipulates an election, I wonder if you agree with me on this, anyone who purposely manipulates an election in order to get their candidate elected by disenfranchising voters, I support the death penalty for them. Do you agree with me, Tom?
Not the death penalty.
I do. I want to see Catherine Harris electrocuted.
Which is something the college Democrats don't support.
I'll tell you why. It's worse than killing someone. It's worse than killing someone to kill our democracy. And, you know, I don't support the death penalty except in the most severe crimes. I think anyone, if it can be shown, and I think it can be shown, that people are intentionally disenfranchising, taking away American people's right to vote, they should get...
For sure.
Okay.
I definitely think the death penalty, I think it's a little out of
I think it might have a deterrent effect. I think
That's a very Republican conservative thing to say, that if you impose a death penalty for most crimes, it'll have a deterrent effect. Unfortunately, people on the liberal left say that the death penalty only seeks to go after those who are innocent and doesn't have any deterrence.
My point is not really to talk about the death penalty. My point is that it seems to me that hijacking our democracy is a very severe crime. To me, it's on the lines of treason, and it should be treated as such. I do want to read some of the emails that I've had that have been flowing in, specifically one from Fred, who mentions all kinds of things I haven't even mentioned on this show yet. He thanks me for doing a show on the threats to democracy, and what he finds more disturbing is that fewer and fewer people say he's overreacting when he says the Bush administration may be the greatest threat today to the United States. Here's what he has to say. We held elections during the Civil War. It seems to me that a full-scale war on American soil would be more disruptive than a potential terror attack. And last time he checked, bin Laden's beef with the USA had something to do with deploying U.S. troops on Saudi Arabian soil. But here are the things he can think of the Bush administration has done. Patriot Act, Patriot 2, people being arrested for wearing anti-Bush or pro-Kerry t-shirts at speaking events, free speech zones, protesters arrested for driving through Crawford on the way to a protest somewhere else, loyalty oaths to hear Dick Cheney, secret prisons, the suspension of the Geneva Conventions, Ari Fleischer telling the press to watch what they say, retroactive classification of documents, no oversight, accountability, or restraint in the executive branch.
Well, that's interesting, free speech zones, because I'd actually like to get your opinion on that.
I'm against free speech zones. I think that, and by the way, I think that's the least important of the things he mentioned, so I can see why you touched on it.
Well,
I don't
think the Democratic Convention, as we know, because of security reasons is what they cited.
Well, I disagree with that.
Legitimate ones kind of, you know, set up a cage and put people in there. I just want to, you know.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that. You're absolutely right. I think that all of America is a free speech zone. And I'll tell you this. If you want to have a free speech zone outside a convention, you should have it in a place where the delegates themselves are see the people who are protesting. There's no point in doing a protest against people who can't see the protest. It should be in front of the place. If they want to have, by the way, metal detectors, if they want to frisk people, not for the content of their signs, but, you know, to make sure they can't shoot, you know, some guns because of the proximity to the convention, I have no problem with that. But it should be definitely close to the convention, and they should be in sight of the listeners. But all the other things that he's saying here, I mean, we have American citizens put in jail for life without trial, without access to a lawyer, clear violation of the Bill of Rights. You can't support that, do you, Tom?
As far as enemy combatants and those who have, you know, fought in with the Taliban, Walker against...
What about Jose Padilla?
And committing treason. I think the courts are working that out. I think we're in an environment after September 11th where the courts are trying to sort out exactly, you know, what it means to live in this environment to promote a secure and safe democracy.
And they've rejected the idea that American citizens lose all their rights just because the president says he thinks they're an enemy combatant. And I don't think you can agree that someone should be put in jail for life without evidence, without trial, without a lawyer, do you?
Well, I think that they're moving forward to be able to give them the opportunity to have counsel and to be able to present.
Okay,
their
what's
case.
Your view, Tom? Is that a good thing? Should they have counsel?
Well, yeah, I think that
okay.
at some certain point they need to be afforded counsel, and
okay.
I think that was
good.
The intention of the Bush administration, but, you know, right after September 11th...
Well, the Bush administration was against that, but I'm glad to hear that you differ with the Bush administration on some things. That's good. I want to hear another comment on Fred's email. He talked about the loyalty oath to Dick Cheney. I don't know if you're aware of this, but at a recent political event in Albuquerque, they said if you want to hear Dick Cheney speak, you have to either have contributed to the Republican Party or sign an oath that you will vote for Dick Cheney in the fall. What's interesting is I think it was counterproductive because uncommitted voters who wanted to hear the vice president speak turned away, were very angry, and I think we've got a bunch of Kerry support there. But it's interesting to me, Tom, because you actually sent me an email showing someone else who's been on this show, Allison Eichele, also a college Republican, who attends Kerry events as dressed up as the flip-flopper, and I support her right to do that. I think that's what free speech is all about. I don't support the right of the Bush supporters that go with megaphones to Kerry events and try to shout him down. But why is it that Dick Cheney insists on loyalty oaths to go to hear his speech?
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that people can't bring megaphones and start.
I support her right to do that. I think that's what free speech is all about. I don't support the right of the Bush supporters that go with megaphones to Kerry events and try to shout him down. But why is it that Dick Cheney insists on loyalty oaths to go to hear his speech?
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that people can't bring megaphones and start, you know, shouting people down, because I think, you know, as far as you said, that all of America should be a free speech zone.
Well, but you have to allow other people to talk. So that's the difference between a megaphone and a sign. A sign during a speech says, I disagree with you. If you try to shout down the speaker, that's something else that I think anyone could agree is not fair. That's my distinction.
Well, I think that, you know, America's a great place. And I think, you know, the topic of the debate, which is on the website, which is, you know, more detrimental to democracy, Al-Qaeda or the Republican Party? I think we cannot forget that 25 million people in Afghanistan have been liberated to be able to participate in that wonderful thing that we cherish so much, using it on the radio, our First Amendment rights, and being able to participate in free speech. And I think, you know, that has been brought to the picture. I think that can't be undermined. And unfortunately, away from, you know, the...
You're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, Mark, John from New Bedford.
Hi, John from New Bedford, Massachusetts. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment, and I'd like to ask the representative from the Republican Party as well, I think it could be rephrased. I really see, I mean, Mark, you know I've called in, I am a Democrat, but I don't see the Republican Party in itself as a threat. I see the inner circle of this administration as a threat.
Okay, well, that's a good point, John. Let me respond to it. It's not just the administration. To me, it's the Republicans in Congress as well. I'm not accusing every single Republican in America of being involved in some massive conspiracy. I am not. There are plenty of good Republicans across the nation. There are some good Republicans in Congress who I've named on occasion. I'll just name a few. Chris Shays and John McCain come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the Republicans who control Congress are really doing some pretty severe things. Tom DeLay calling out the Department of Homeland Security to get a partisan advantage in Texas.
Yes.
The bribery of Nick Smith on the House floor, not allowing Democrats to even offer amendments, not allowing them to read a bill before a vote, restricting it to 1 hour of debate, not allowing votes on popular measures like overtime pay or stopping the importation of drugs in Canada. On that one, by the way, John, both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House, voted to allow seniors to get drugs from Canada. And despite that, the Republican Party said, I don't care that both houses voted for it. We're not going to allow this to become a law. So the Republicans that matter, the ones that control Congress, it's not just the administration, John. I mean, look at the ones on the Supreme Court. Look at the people that are, you know, the people who are running the campaigns as well. The people that, you know, look at Thomas Scully running Medicaid. It's not just the administration. It is in Congress. It's in the Supreme Court. It's people like Senator Day O'Connor saying, I won't leave the court until there's a Republican as president. It's Scalia. It's not just the administration, I'm sorry to say.
Hey, John?
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I do watch this and read, but one of the things I've always noticed after a lot of these close votes in Congress, that there seems to be a lot of after-the-vote strong-arm tactics,
a lot
of disciplining within the team.
Right.
I think Democrats can be just as guilty of misguided loyalty to their party as a Republican can.
Well, that's true.
I sit down with a friend of mine who's the captain of the Republican Party out here in Massachusetts. And, I mean, believe me, it's like we agree almost on everything.
Yeah, I want to be clear. I think it's a good point, John. I'm not attacking individual Republicans across the country. I'm attacking those that are in charge.
No, because the gentleman, I'm listening to the gentleman you have on, and it's just I'm really trying very hard. Like, my wife will sometimes say, I hate George Bush. And I'd be like, just don't put hate into it. It's like, because then we become irrational.
It's not about hate. It's about his policies. I'm attacking his attacks on Democratic policies.
Well,
I it's not personal.
Yourself, but I just, you know, because you know, I listen to your show. I deal with everything.
And I appreciate that.
And I just, but I really, I've listened to stuff. You know, one of the things, Orrin Hatch, I look at an example. I was very proud of Orrin Hatch when he was appalled by the fact that some of his staffers broke into
the
Democratic database.
Absolutely. I will give him credit for that. A lot of Republicans were defending their breaking into to Democratic computers and stealing information, taking letters and so forth. And Orrin Hatch agreed to prosecute his own staff. I got to give him credit for it. Absolutely right. That was a brave thing. John, hang on one second. I want to give Tom a chance. He's been chomping at the bit here. Tom, go ahead.
Well, John, I was just going to ask you, being from Massachusetts, are you part of that 49% of Massachusetts who feel that Senator Kerry will tell people what they want to hear instead of what he really believes in order to get elected?
You know, to tell you the truth, I don't know Senator Kerry well. I'm still investigating. I've watched him on C-SPAN, and I've seen him and read, and I like him. I think he's had trouble with his message. I think he's been listening a little too much to a lot of people and not saying what's coming, what he actually believes. But I'm going to vote for him, and I have faith in him over George Bush.
I appreciate that, John. Last word before you go.
I hope I answered your question, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we've got to go to one more commercial break. When we come back, I want to close up. I want to give Tom a chance to respond. I've made lots of very strong charges. But, again, I'm not charging so much against policies of this administration, though obviously I disagree with them. To me, it's a much larger question, a much more scary question than the policies this administration supports, and that is how they support the policies. They support them by giving misinformation, by systematically trying to stop the checks and balances. Congress investigated Bill Clinton to the tune of more than 1,000 subpoenas. How many subpoenas have been issued against the Bush administration thus far? Zero. I want to talk about that and to talk about our democratic institutions and what we can do to protect the checks and balances found in our Constitution right after these messages. If you want to call in, all you have to do is pick up the phone, toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back.
About the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
The Timken Company, based in Canton, Ohio, makes steel and other industrial products, and last year it was the proud recipient of a visit by His Eminence, George W. Bush. The Prez had traveled to Ohio, a state that's up for grabs in this fall's election, to hype the value of all the tax giveaways he's passed for the rich. He went to Canton to claim that those giveaways would trickle down from the rich to create jobs for middle-class America, and he needed a good visual for his televised speech. Timken's factory was the perfect made-for-TV backdrop. A crowd of Timken's hard-hatted blue-collar workers was dutifully assembled for Bush. The boss man, Tim Timken himself, was on stage beaming with pride and nodding in approval at George's every sentence. Why wouldn't he? Tim has long been a major financial backer of both Bush presidents. Now, fast forward to May of this year. Just months after George's highly publicized rooster strut in Canton, Tim announced that he was closing three of his U.S. factories, eliminating 1,300 jobs, and moving production to low-wage centers elsewhere, including overseas. Curiously, there was no national media coverage of this development, which made a mockery of Bush's earlier political posturing. What's to happen to the workers who were made to serve as props for George's pitch about the power of trickle-down economics? I have no idea what I'm going to do, says Scott Anderson, 41 years old and a 23-year loyal worker at Timken. There are just no good job opportunities left in this community. Scott added that he now couldn't pay for the college education of his kids. "I want a better America, as my parents did for me," he says. Ironically, a Timken spokesman coldly replied, "It's a business issue, not a political issue." This is Jim Hightower saying he's dead wrong about that. By stiffing America's middle class, Bush and Tim Timken are playing with political dynamite.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill 6 eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We've got a few minutes more. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the threat to our democracy from the Republican Party. Al-Qaeda is a threat to American security, no doubt. Killed 3,000 Americans. But which is a greater threat to our democracy, to our institutions, to the checks and balances of government? We've just heard from John, caller from New Bedford, Massachusetts, who pointed out quite rightly that it's not all Republicans, and I would be the first to agree with him. It's not all Republicans. But the Republicans that are in control of our government are the ones at issue here. And it's not just places where you'd think, the Bush administration or Congress or even the Supreme Court. It's also in our independent institutions. The Bush administration is corrupting our independent institutions. Did you get a tax cut from the IRS? I'm sure you did. And it's one thing for the IRS to mail you out a check, that's fine. But have you ever heard the IRS act as cheerleader for the administration? Here's a quote from the promotional notices that went out with your tax cut. Quote, "We are pleased to inform you that the United States Congress passed and President George W. Bush signed into law the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001, which provides long-term tax relief for all Americans who pay income taxes." And on the checks were the catchphrase, quote, "Tax relief for America's workers," unquote. Of course, the IRS didn't mention that 1% of Americans got 40% of the tax cuts. But it's not their job. They shouldn't be in a position. What we find is that time after time, the Bush administration is taking out independent agencies. We know that when scientists said that there's no connection between breast cancer and abortion, Bush found the one discredited study that said there may have been a connection and then said, well, there people are on either side here, and fired scientists that disagree. The same is true with global warming. One other example, there are actually states have gotten 2.4% less money. And they've had to raise taxes on a lot of people because Congress, the federal government, the Bush administration has been starving the states. So when states complained, what did Bush say? You know, I'm sorry, that's my priorities. No. What he did is he closed the budget information for states. This is a document put out by the federal government that tells how much money publishing information on what would go to the states so that, hey, if you don't know what you're getting, no one cares. They're actually taking nonpartisan institutions in our government and trying to promote them for partisan ends. But I know that my guest, Tom Robbins, disagrees. Tom, you got a few minutes left. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Well, that's to say that when your caller and you started discussing the Orrin Hatch case, that kind of perked my interest. Orrin Hatch is a senior senator from my state of Utah. And I think he did a good thing in saying that he would go after those people who perhaps hacked in or misused privileges
in the
Judiciary Committee. But interestingly enough, what they discovered in those emails from the Democrats and different major lobbyist groups and special interest groups who support and fund the Democratic Party, they found out that they were going to use the Senate nomination for this process, which is guaranteed in the United States Constitution to make sure that we have an efficient and functioning judiciary, that they were going to hijack this process for political purposes and political gain.
Well, wait. Hijack this process. Well, no, let's talk.
I'm that there's been no outcry about this.
Well, I don't know what the outcry is. Hijack these purposes for political gain. We all know the Supreme Court makes political decisions. Judges, lower court judges, decisions, maybe they shouldn't, but they do, in fact, been more political, I would argue, than even the Warren Court. Is it improper for Senate Democrats to do what frankly, Senate Republicans did when they refused more than 100 nominees of Bill Clinton, as far as the Democrats have refused less than 10. Is it improper for them to you know, use the Senate process? I don't understand how that's hijacking.
I'm commenting on the emails that were discovered
by
Orrin Hatch's staffers that were between different special interest groups
right. That
support and fund the Democratic Party, who were basing the timing on when they were going to hold hearings on how they could do the most political damage to George W. Bush.
Well, there's no question that certain interest groups that help the Democratic Party, people who approach, opposed a number of the Bush nominees who, for example, are against a woman's right to choose, whatever you think about that, and they exercise political pressure as interest groups to try to encourage Senate Democrats to vote no, to hold hearings, all of that. I don't see what the problem with that is. To me, that's very different from using the federal government to track down a Texas plane, from refusing to give press conferences to the press, from refusing to testify before the 9/11 Commission. You know, there's one interest groups, and I don't just mean liberal ones. Every interest group, whether you're the NRA or the Moral Majority or National Abortion Rights Action League, whoever you are, these are Americans bonding together. They believe in something strongly. Sure, they try to influence politicians. Where it gets disgusting in my mind is where there are payoffs concerned, where you have a corporation giving $1 million to George Bush and then getting $1 billion back in tax benefits. That's very different to me from pro-life or pro-choice saying we need this judge or we don't need this judge. That, to me, is politics at its best.
Well, I think what you have in the Democratic Party under Tip O'Neill and under LBJ is that you saw the disgusting abuses of power. And, I agree with John when he said in both parties there exists a certain element. People who are just trying to further their own career. You worked on Capitol Hill.
Yep.
Just trying to move up the political ladder. So I have a solution for your listeners. I hope they're listening.
Go ahead.
I want them in 2004 to cast a vote for Nader, the third party candidate. I think that's the
solution. That is so typical. So typical. We all know, and we should know, by the way, if you don't know, that Ralph Nader is a tool of the Republicans. He can't even get on the ballot in Michigan without the Republican Party. I'll tell you what they did in Michigan, and they're doing it in all across the country. They go to the Republican Party. In fact, they hired a firm to do this. The Republican Party hired a firm to go and to go to Republican rallies and say, the best way to beat John Kerry? Put Ralph Nader on the ballot. And they get all these Republicans to sign up to have Ralph Nader on the ballot. Here's the deal for you. How about if you petition to have Nader on the ballot, you're required to vote for him in the fall? How about that? That would take the Republican votes away from George Bush.
Kind of like a loyalty oath to Cheney that you're against.
You wouldn't want that, Tom, because you know as I do that Ralph Nader is nothing but a tool of the Republicans, and that's why you're promoting his campaign.
The Democratic Party has consistently worked against the challenge, basically the signatures, not only in this upcoming
election. As well they should, because
they see him as a threat. I thought the Democratic Party was generally the party of choice.
Here's how third parties work in America.
They just want it between Bush and Kerry.
I got 1 minute left, and then we got to end this conversation, Tom. Here's how third parties work in America. If John Kerry gets 35% of the vote, and Ralph Nader gets 25% of the vote, and Bush gets 40%, you have opposition to Bush at 60%, and the 40% wins. That's how our winner-take-all system works, and I am more than willing to work to change to make America more democratic. We can start by throwing out the Electoral College. We can get rid of the Senate as well. One person, one vote. But the way the system...